WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
And just like that, it's Friday again. There's been quite a few news stories circling overhead this week. But don't worry, we're here to make sense of the biggest local and state stories in our weekly news recap. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. We'll dive into stories like these.
Today, the embattled school's chief, Pedro Martinez, argues a lack of money remains a major hurdle as the union pushes for a new contract.
Senator Vance has said that there's a climate problem in the past. Donald Trump called it a hoax and then joked that these things would make more beachfront property.
Senator. Natural gas, we got to invest more in it. Kamala Harris has done the opposite. That's raised energy prices and also meant that we're doing
worse
by the climate.
Senator, your time is up.
And of course, you know we can't do this alone. For this week's panel, we're joined by Chicago Sun-Times education reporter Nader Issa and Axios Chicago reporter Carrie Shepard. Now, during the hour, there was a huge development around the Chicago Board of Education. The entire Board of Ed is resigning this month. Here's Nader.
Yeah, so we were expecting some news to potentially come today, and it has. The mayor's office has now confirmed that every single member of the Chicago Board of Education is going to resign later this month. They're staying on while replacements are found, but this is a pretty stunning development. The entire board is resigning.
Everyone.
There's no one left on the Chicago Board of Education.
Is this what you were expecting?
Something along these lines. We had heard different numbers the past couple weeks, whether it would be, you know, 3 and then 6 and now all 7. But I think there's no sort of minimizing what this is. The entire Board of Education is resigning.
Wow.
And this is Mayor Brandon Johnson's handpicked appointed school board. It's a board that has been working hand in hand with him to implement his progressive education agenda. In many ways, we've called school boards sort of rubber stamps for mayors in the past. Mm-hmm. This one definitely was, because they had the same vision going in. He appointed a lot of sort of people with activist backgrounds, a lot of and advocacy backgrounds, people with expertise in special education, in community schools, in Black student achievement. And they had the same vision, but this strife that we've talked about the past couple months and especially the past couple weeks, it came to a head and the entire school board's resigning.
Wow. I mean, how does this reflect on the mayor?
It's a bit of an embarrassment. And I think we need to sort of put it in context and understand why this is happening. We reported last week the school board isn't huge fans of Martinez. They've had problems with him. There was a performance review last December that laid out a lot of areas they wanted to see him improve. They aren't happy with him. But we also, through our sourcing, the statement today, nobody's saying this publicly right now. But the board also was unhappy with the mayor's handling of this situation. Mm-hmm. They are sort of in this difficult position where they're unhappy with the school's CEO, but they're not able to move at the pace that they want. And so it sort of was a mutual thing. They're upset. The mayor's upset that he's not getting his way. His orders aren't being followed by his appointed school board. And so there's this parting of ways that's happening.
So
in a month, they'll be on for a month. That leads us into the election. But of course, anybody who's newly elected doesn't start till January. Do we know, Nader, what they'll do in the interim? Will we have a school board?
There will be a school board. We're unclear what happens to the board meetings this month. The current school board members, our understanding is they are going to stay on for a little bit longer so that there's a bit of a smooth transition between them and the new board. But
because there would be kind of a 2-month gap in there.
Yeah. Right? And there's no doubt that there needs to be a school board in place. The school district can't continue without a school board in place. So I don't want to overstate the sort of disruption on governance. They're going to find school board members, but I mean, the timing of this too, like we said, it's a month out from the city's first ever school board elections.
Right.
Where, what is it? 3 months out from the first elected school board members being seated. And like we said earlier too, the mayor is going to have to appoint 11 school board members. So this might be an opportunity to find some early candidates that'll stay on.
Wow. So is this a revolt on their end, or do you think Johnson asked them to resign?
It's like we're saying, it's a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
I'm not sure if I would call it a revolt, but
I know
seven
this is
members
what,
are it's a pretty, pretty big decision.
This is what for Governor Pritzker feared, isn't it?
Yeah, he did say that he wanted to see them stay on. He wants everyone to sort of put students first. And there's no doubt that this sort of drama, this continuing escalation has been a distraction for the school district. And you never know how much like individual families, individual parents and students are distracted on a daily basis. They might be. I mean, it's always tough hearing about change at the top of the school district and what it might mean for schools. But yeah, it's something that's dragged on, and now this is just the latest chapter.
I don't know if this heartens voters to really then go to the, for the school board elections, or if it just discourages them even more. It's just, drama with a capital D is just not something you want to continually
hear drama
about your school board and your mayor.
Right. And we just talked a moment ago about the teachers union contract talks, Nader. I mean, how does this impact that?
Well, for some people, I want to start with Pedro Martinez, because for some people, they might think, oh, this is a win. The mayor's entire board is losing, is resigning, excuse me.
A win for whom? For
yeah, people might think it's a win for Pedro Martinez. Like, he won this battle with the mayor. The board is leaving, and it's a protest of the mayor. I mean, the people that are going to be appointed now, their sort of number one task for the next couple months is probably going to be to fire Pedro Martinez. So it's hard to see that as a win for him. And then because of that, for the Chicago Teachers Union, if Martinez is fired, they've called him the biggest obstacle to landing a deal that they want. And so if the Board of Education, they choose to do a couple things that the mayor's asked for, like take out a loan to help pay for a Chicago Teachers Union contract for this year.
A high interest loan.
Yeah, a high interest loan. The purpose of that would be to avoid cuts, because, Pedro Martinez hasn't built in room in this year's budget for any CTU contract. And so if they want to add spending, there are going to be have to be subsequent cuts, which could mean furloughs. It could mean cuts to staffing at schools. So it's a step for the CTU closer maybe to landing a contract.
Yeah.
But it's not a step toward solving this all, because CTU still has to reckon with the fact that CPS has a funding shortfall.
So if all these Board of Ed members but one are Johnson's picks, I mean, what exactly is he looking for? Is this simply a rubber stamp?
Yeah, I think there is this sort of thinking on his part that I appointed this board. We've seen boards do this all the time. Whatever the mayor wants, whatever the CPS CEO wants, they usually work in tandem. Not so much this time. The board, approves whatever we want. Stacey Davis Gates, the CTU president, she's said, why can't Pedro Martinez take out a loan if he, as chief financial officer of CPS in the past, has taken out loans? Why can't he do this if school CEOs have closed 50 schools in predominantly Black and Brown communities in the past? If they've outsourced janitorial services, all these things that people have seen as harmful to the district, why can't Pedro Martinez do this for us now? And, you know, it's a difficult conversation because Pedro Martinez is responsible for the school district. And so if that funding doesn't come later, it falls on his head that he put the district in a very difficult financial position moving forward.
All right. Well, you can continue to follow this story from the breaking news that the entire Chicago Board of Education is resigning later this month. Our education reporters, Nader Issa of the Sun-Times and Sarah Karp of WBEZ, they're going to keep bringing you the very latest on this news. Up next, the billion-dollar elephant in the room, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson's delayed budget address. This is happening because the city is still struggling with closing a billion-dollar budget gap. Carrie tells us how common this kind of delay is.
It is not that common. We usually expect the budget in October, and obviously there is this billion-dollar hole. I think you guys referred to it as the elephant in the room.
The elephant in the room. And what is this two-week delay going to change?
I'm not so sure. I mean, Nader would know more about this, but I think really what's hanging in the balance is this big gap, right, with CPS in the district, which, you know, there is some disagreement between, which Nader's alluding to, between the board and the mayor and CPS head Pedro Martinez about how to fill this gap, the spending gap. So I think that is contributing to it. So he's sort of balancing two budget issues as we speak, but there one is feeding into the other.
Yeah, the mayor and his budget director have said, quote, everything is on the table in order to balance this budget. I mean, what might that mean, Carrie?
I mean, I think that means cuts and furloughs.
Yeah.
And you
know, literally everything.
Literally everything. And that also can mean, which perks up a lot of tax residents' ears, is that going to mean an increase in taxes? Something that nobody welcomes and every politician promises they're not going to do. But, you know, we have to fund the schools and there's a gap. So how are we going to do that is the big question.
Let's hear a little bit of what the mayor had to say about how to close that $1 billion budget gap.
So we're going to do everything in our power to, of course, to fix this challenge. But we also have to be very clear that the way to transform this city, this state, this country, the rich and the ultra wealthy have to pay their fair share in taxes.
I mean, I guess that's I hadn't heard that quote before, but I suppose that's sort of alluding to a progressive tax that, you know, we have tried to get passed in Illinois that has failed. So I'm not sure that's actually a solution in the sense that it doesn't seem like that's a policy that's on the table.
Well,
right
Nader,
now.
I mean, as Carrie brought up, he promised not to raise property taxes during his campaign. But what do you think? Might a $1 billion deficit force him to break the promise?
Well, that's the question on everyone's mind. And, you know, property taxes are one of the very few revenue sources that are in the city's control. It's one of the few levers they can actually pull. And so it would be a surprise to not see them at least consider that. And the mayor has been asked repeatedly about this. Are you going to raise property taxes? And he's sort of sidestepped those questions. So he's opened the door to it. He hasn't ruled that out. His budget director hasn't ruled that out. It's a possibility that people should be looking at as budget season gets underway.
Yeah. Despite Chicago's looming billion-dollar deficit, the city approved a $100 million pay increase for the Kansas-based company that staffs migrant shelters. Nader, haven't we cut the number of shelters?
We have. There's during the peak of new arrivals in Chicago, there were 30 migrant shelters, about 15,000 people living there. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest shelters just closed this week on the Lower West Side. So there's now a little bit under 5,500 people living in 16 shelters.
Mm-hmm.
So those numbers have fallen. But the mayor sidestepped questions about what the increase is for. What they did is they increased the limit for what this company can invoice. And so spending could go up $100 million more. It might not. But it is a very sizable increase that right now we don't exactly understand.
So Mayor Johnson inks a $100 million increase for this company called Favorite Healthcare Staffing Carrier. Does that make sense to you?
Well, to Nader's point is that, you know, with the shelters, if we all remember, Favorite Healthcare is what former Mayor Lori Lightfoot tapped when we were sort of in this, the crisis, the throes of the crisis of Texas sending new arrivals, mm-hmm. and we had
buses arriving every day.
Housing. And then it came out that some of these workers were charging exorbitant amount hourly, you know, something $100 an hour or whatever to supervise some of the shelters,
right.
To which that is what Mayor Johnson is saying, that the city has cut the hourly pay. But to Nader's point, there are far fewer migrants in shelters, but we should note that, you know, the mayor released a plan, you know, quite a few months ago about, you know, we're going to start evicting from the shelters, to get new arrivals more permanent housing. But my colleague Monica Ang has reported that, you know, actually some of these new arrivals are leaving the shelters and then getting right back in line because there is a shortage of permanent housing. So it's sort of a catch-22. The answer from the city on how or why they're spending this to NBC was very confusing. Mm-hmm. It was basically like, they can send us an invoice for more, but that doesn't mean we're giving them more money. And I'm not quite sure
what does that mean.
I don't know. I'm confused as well. So I'm trying to kind of dig into that and understand it a little myself.
Interesting. Another thing that's not going to help solve the budget crisis, Nader, alders are being asked to approve a $1.75 million settlement. This is to a man injured by a driver who was being chased by police. We had another police pursuit that ended tragically Monday night in McKinley Park, where one person died and two others were injured. I mean, besides the tragic emotional costs of these accidents, the financial settlements, they're really adding up for taxpayers.
They are. And I mean, police settlements are one of the reasons that police reform has been, you know, top of mind for a lot of people in Chicago and around the country for years. Because if there's this much police misconduct, this much police wrongdoing that's costing taxpayers this much money, something's wrong with the system. Something has to change. This pursuit policy is one of the sort of outcomes of that reform. And police pursuits were supposed to come to an end. This is something that happened back in 2018. This police pursuit chased a gentleman for a traffic stop. He took off. He ended up hitting another car. Mm-hmm. The driver of that other car, this innocent bystander, suffered injuries, had to have two abdominal surgeries. And now the Finance Committee and City Council has approved a $1.7 million settlement.
Yeah.
And that's not the only settlement up right now. Mm-hmm. There's another one that passed out of committee, and in total it's $2.5 million. That is a really, really hefty amount of money for the city to spend for its own officers causing wrongdoing.
Chicago taxpayers have spent over $74 million since 2019 to resolve these kinds of lawsuits sparked by police pursuits. So we'll see how alders respond when this goes to the full city council for a vote. And that could happen next Wednesday. Let's turn to something very different. Illinois Treasurer Michael Frerich's home, it was targeted and defaced by pro-Palestinian protesters, Carrie. What happened?
Yeah, Illinois Treasurer, it was earlier in the night, Frerich's had a fundraiser, and that was targeted by the group Code Pink, whom we saw a lot of during DNC, Nader too. We both covered the protests, and this is actually a national group that has been very vocal on this issue. The issue being, and then they made their way apparently to Frerich's Lakeview home, being that the treasurer has approved investment in Israel. This is an issue that we hear a lot about with the protests on campuses as well, is that universities have these investments, you know, multi-million dollar investments, obviously, mm-hmm. in Israel. That is something, you know, and Frerich's doesn't deny that, and he defends it, that his job is to be a smart, prudent fiscal operator for the state, and he says that is what that is. And they targeted his home, which I'm, you know, they've done to other public officials, to Congress. I think Congressman Brad Schneider was another one. So that happened earlier this week, and there was some vandalism.
Yeah, and it's like Carrie said, it's been a sort of outcome of these protests. First, there was talk about a ceasefire. That hasn't happened. There's been talk about the United States no longer sending aid, military aid to Israel. That's continued to happen. And so, like, a growth that has come out of this, it's not a new demand from pro-Palestinian right. protesters. This is something that folks have talked about for years. Don't invest in weapons manufacturers that are benefiting from this war. Don't invest in Israeli bonds when they're committing these attacks against civilians. Yeah. There's over 40,000 civilians in Gaza and now more than 2,000 in Lebanon. And so it's a longstanding demand that has been made.
Yeah. Chicago.
A demand that's never really heard, it feels like, or met, in the sense of, like, especially with the universities, you know, they often say, well, we'll look into that. But, you know, and so thus the protests continue, obviously.
Right. Chicago college students found out this fall that their universities will have new, more restrictive policies on protests. Walk us through those changes, Nader.
Yeah, so a lot of the big universities in town, well, Northwestern, they're not in town, but they're in the area. Yeah. Northwestern, DePaul, Loyola, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, they all have more restrictions on students. Among the new rules, they're restricting protests to daytime hours. So they don't want anything at night after the sun goes down. They've also designated specific free speech zones. They've banned unapproved flyers, banners, and they want people to sort of advance register to speak. These are all limitations, obviously, that have grown out of the campus protests last mm-hmm. year. There was a really strong response by a lot of these college administrators across the country, and we saw them here in Chicago
right.
trying to tamp down the protests. Students will tell you that that doesn't really make them feel like they're, you know, accepted and able to give their voice on issues they care about at campuses that, you know, we all paid tens of thousands of dollars to attend. So
right.
it's the sort of continuation of the back and forth.
And something notable, just 2 days after U of C announced their protest restrictions, they received a huge donation of $100 million to, quote, support free expression on campus. All right, former House Speaker Mike Madigan's defense lawyers made one last attempt to get some charges tossed before his corruption trial starts next week. How did the judge rule, Carrie?
Yeah, I think we talked about this the last time I was on.
That's why you're here today.
This is kind of the perennial story. So the judge ruled, though, the trial will go on. If we remember, they were trying to get it tossed out because there was a Supreme Court ruling about, you know, bribery, and if it's actually considered a bribe or it's just a gratuity. The judge said, no, this is actually corruption. It was clear, according to this judge, this ruling, that former House Speaker Michael Madigan actually, you know, there was an exchange for sort of an exchange in legislation for ComEd in exchange for hiring some of the folks that Madigan recommended. The other issue that Madigan's defense brought up is that the jury would be prejudiced because they played snippets of former Alderman Danny Solis, who was wearing a wire for the feds mm-hmm. to actually catch some of this alleged corruption. They played a snippet of that, of Danny Solis talking to Madigan's former sort of chief of staff, kind of right-hand man, Michael McLean. And, you know, the language is pretty damning of sort of, well, I'll quid pro quo. It's mm-hmm. pretty, it's in there. It's pretty clear. So they said that should be tossed out, but the judge said, no, that will not be tossed out. So yeah. The trial will go on.
Jury selection for the trial gets underway next Tuesday, right?
I believe so. Next Tuesday or next Wednesday, sometime next week.
Yeah, I think it's Tuesday. All right, let's turn to another courtroom drama. His radio ads and billboards made local divorce lawyer Jeffrey Leving a household name. He claimed to be a champion of dad's rights, But the Illinois Supreme Court has a different take on what he was up to. Any details, Carrie?
Yeah, they are penalizing him because they are saying that he charged unreasonable fees, and you had some of his former clients come out. And I think what is sort of at the base of this is sort of pointing to what could be described as predatory behavior, in the sense of dad's rights are, you know, in custody battles. This is in family court when you're trying to get custody, joint custody. Mm-hmm. There's often this thought that dads don't get the same rights. So that's his big thing. Mm-hmm. He had commercials with former radio personality Man Cow saying, this is my attorney.
Oh my goodness.
And the issue being that, you know, you pay a hefty retainer for an attorney. And, you know, if you don't know, if you haven't had to have a lawyer, which many of us, you know, other than maybe real estate transactions, you know, we don't have to. So if you don't know what those prices are, you're going to pay it. You're going to keep paying it. You're going to rack up legal fees. And what they are saying is that they didn't get results for these clients, that he didn't get results for these clients and was paying, and it was charging, quote, unreasonable fees.
Yeah. Wow. All right. All while owning the website dadsrights.com. And he had a podcast called The Dad's Rights Legal Hour. So really seems to be a master of marketing. It was a battle of the Midwestern dads earlier this week, Tuesday night. Did any of you watch the vice presidential debate? And I'm not talking about the clips the next day. Did you sit there and watch it Tuesday at 8?
I did, actually.
Did you?
I did sit there. I'm surprised because usually it annoys me and I don't get much out of it, but I would say that this was a little bit more policy focused, which is a little harder with Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump. It tends to be a little bit more personal attacks. I did feel like there was a lot of, you know, policy talk in terms of reproductive rights. You heard that. I'm not sure anybody really changed anybody's mind in terms of how the candidates answered, but
that's what they say these things usually, you know, how they usually go, these VP debates.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the moment that is going to stick out for viewers and that is going to, and has been played out a lot, is when Governor Walz really blatantly asked Senator Vance, J.D. Vance, do you think that the election was stolen? You know, something that Donald Trump continues to say to this day.
It was a very direct question.
It was a very direct question. It was a very indirect answer of a, you know, let's move forward. I'm about the future. Attack Kamala Harris. Like, look, that's a strategy, of course. But, and then on the other side, I would say that Governor Walz floundered a bit when he was asked about being in China. And this was earlier.
Said he misspoke. People wanted to hear him say, I lied. I messed up.
Right. And he's not going to say that, right? I mean, they're not going to say that. And he started off a little nervous. They did. I this Midwestern nice thing.
Was the headline everywhere.
I'm not sure why. I mean, they were, I guess, respectful-ish.
Yeah. I think it's a, you know, they
how
both.
How low is our bar?
Right.
That's like.
Only people in the Midwest can can speak at each other without.
It's very low.
Yeah, and actually talking about substance and stuff. You know, I was like, wow, that's the bar. I mean,
it's that they, you know, they've both kind of made being Midwestern a part of their narrative, an important part of their narrative. And I think from what we watched, it did seem noticeably more civil than the presidential debate last month. So I think that's where everybody's getting that from.
It's right.
Like, well, compared to that,
sure.
This is Midwestern nice.
Midwestern nice. Yeah,
I don't
guess
know.
So.
Did you see it, Nader, in real time?
No, I was playing at my weekly pool league. So the debate was not.
Sounds
TV
like a
though.
Fun time.
Yeah. Was it Midwestern nice at
it
pool?
It was not. We were very focused on beating each other at pool.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Illinois is solidly blue, so we're not really in play. But other Midwestern states are key battlegrounds. Trump was campaigning in Wisconsin ahead of the vice presidential debate Tuesday. He was in Michigan yesterday. He's going to be here on October 15th. He's going to be speaking at the Economic Club of Chicago. Harris is also spending time in Wisconsin and Michigan. I mean, do you all think that we're just going to see a lot more of the candidates and their surrogates in our neighboring states over the coming weeks?
Oh, absolutely. Harris in Wisconsin got a boost. Liz Cheney, came out and with to support Harris. And that is not something you'd ever expect to hear as a Cheney supporting a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I heard something on NPR earlier today. The spending in Ohio, because there's just so many media markets to target, is just hundreds of millions of dollars. Like you say, we're pretty solidly blue here in Illinois. So sometimes we're like ho-hum during the presidential part, but we have plenty of, it's still very, very consequential, our votes. And we have other, important congressional races. And of course, the school board we have our first partially elected school board race in November, which Nader knows all about. but those are, that's stuff you can't forget down ballot, of course, right? Just mm-hmm. because we will probably go blue for Kamala Harris doesn't mean that some of our other races are not contested.
I mean, Chicago voters were lined up Wednesday. Early voting opened up here in the city. Voting starts next week if you live in suburban Cook County. It's already underway in the collar counties. What do listeners need to know, Nader, about what Carrie just brought up, the school board candidates that'll be on the ballots?
Yeah, I mean, if national politics and, the presidential election are oversaturated and people are growing tired of that, it might be the exact opposite for school board races. People are still learning that these races are even actually happening. And not to plug our own stuff, but I would highly recommend voters and listeners go check out suntimes.com/voterguide. That's our really comprehensive voter guide tool for these school board elections. You can put in your address, see who's running in your district, read questionnaires, mm-hmm. learn more about their credentials and background, see their pictures. A lot of times people want to know
you got to put a face to the name
who's mm-hmm. running.
For sure.
So that it's a really helpful tool. We also just today, breaking news, have downstairs in the lobby print copies of this voter guide that'll be distributed across the city. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
And it's a very consequential election for the schools. It's going to be partially elected and partially appointed for now, at least for the next couple of years. There's 10 geographic voting districts across the city. The mayor is going to appoint another 11 school board members, including the board president.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something to keep an eye on. The sort of governance of Chicago Public Schools is changing at the board level.
And Nader, businesses and charter school interests have raised millions to support candidates who oppose the CTU.
Yeah, we first reported on this last month, my colleague Sarah Karp and I, that there are these groups. One of them is called the Urban Center Action. It's a group with ties to former mayoral candidate Paul Vallis. Juan Rangel, he's this former charter school executive that had to resign through controversy. They've resurfaced. They have this PAC. They're raising a ton of money
mm-hmm.
to both support and oppose candidates. The other big money group is the Illinois Network of Charter Schools. They have their own essentially super PAC where they're getting a lot of contributions. Reed Hastings, the Netflix founder and CEO,
mm-hmm.
gave a ton of money. A lot of Chicago area business folks, billionaires are giving money, and they're pouring that right into the elections. Combined, they've spent a little over $500,000 so far mostly supporting candidates. Some of them opposing. So it's turning into a big money race.
Yeah. Even though there won't be any aldermanic candidates on this ballot, residents in some wards got flyers this week and their alders backing an ordinance that would ban natural gas appliances in future construction. What is this about, Carrie?
Yeah, this was backed by the union that represents gas pipeline engineers. And the confusion, to your point, was that there isn't an aldermanic race now.
Yes.
So they didn't really understand why they were being, these alders that were targeted didn't really understand it. So this is an issue, and you see this in high rises. I live in one. We have electric, we don't have gas. You're seeing this more that they're trying to move to electric stoves and away from gas because of environmental concerns. Obviously, the unions that represent the pipeline workers are saying that's going to be a massive hit to us and our industry, and we're going to lose jobs, which is a fair critique. The alders who were on these mailers, that they were saying, we didn't know who was backing this. Why are we being targeted? And it's because of their support for this ordinance, which I think is still in legislative limbo, to be clear. I think it's kind of languishing in rules right now. Mm-hmm. But this is going to continue to be an issue. That's the point of your union, your labor union. You fight legislation like this that could actually, affect your job.
Do you think this kind of messaging could actually influence homeowners and impact aldermanic support for the ordinance?
No. First of all, sadly and cynically, our city elections don't get a ton of turnout anyway. So I don't know that this is going to be, and to be clear, this is for new construction. So it's not
that's true.
It's not retroactive. So, anybody who's maybe paying attention to this might be like developers, developers who are, building high rises or housing. But I don't know that come city election time, anyone's going to remember this.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll come back out. But the people who are really plugged into their aldermanic races, they're concerned about a lot of maybe other issues.
Right. Nader, let's talk CTU for a moment, because right now the schools are still in the midst of tense contract talks with the union, right? What's the latest on that?
They are, and that's one of the things that's sort of feeding this acrimony between CPS and the mayor's office and the union and the school board. They are in contract negotiations. They've been in them since April.
Mm-hmm.
Usually these negotiations drag on, so it might be a bit of a surprise for people to feel like since July, basically, there's been all this tension around contract negotiations. But really what the CTU has wanted to do is wrap up this contract and then go to Springfield and fight for more funding for the school district to pay for whatever they had just agreed to in the contract.
Yeah.
And that is one of the reasons that there's so much ire directed at Pedro Martinez, the school's CEO, is because he hasn't really agreed to what they want in this contract. And so it includes more help. Well, first, of course, raises, better benefits, also more help for migrant students in the form of staffing, more help for, and those are students who have a lot of needs from being unhoused or needing to learn English. They also are seeking help for unhoused students in general. They want more help for special education students, better access to sports, arts, all of these things that a lot of students in some schools in the district have, but not all.
Mm-hmm. We also saw the teachers union call for the same termination clause as CEO Martinez. Tell us more about that.
And that clause in his contract is maybe the key issue in why Martinez is still here. It was added to his contract in the last months of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's time as mayor in late 2022.
Yeah.
And it says that if he's to be fired without cause, meaning they just want a new CEO, he has to stay on for 6 months.
You can't just get rid of me.
Right. It's the sort of poison pill in this contract that really can paralyze the school district and the school board and the mayor if they wanted to make a change. And so what the CTU proposed is, well, the CEO that we want to be gone, he sort of has this clause that's protecting him right now. We want that type of protection for all of our members, all the teachers in the schools. It's obviously that's not anything that's ever going to happen, but it's this sort of, I don't know if you want to call it sarcastic or whatever, little jab at the bargaining table to make this proposal and say, we want the exact terms that the CEO has.
Well, Carrie, Nader isn't convinced, but do you think there's any chance of actually getting that wording added to teachers' contracts?
If Nader says no, then I say no. That's how union negotiations work. You aim high, you go in high. The CTU is asking for 9% raise. Anyone who has negotiated a contract knows you that's what you do. That clause that Pedro Martinez was a wise move by him, knowing that the mayor who appointed him was gone, and that he could possibly have what many foresaw as an acrimonious relationship with the new mayor.
With the new mayor, yeah. All right, transitioning, Carrie, into another story. The suburban owner of a COVID testing lab pleaded guilty to fraud. What are the details here?
Yeah, this was, we all remember in the throes of the start of the pandemic that these testing labs would kind of pop up in storefronts.
They were everywhere with long lines.
With long lines and sort of questionable tactics. And you sort of wondered, you know, is this actually healthcare? What's going on here? And they were also receiving money from the government in, you know, COVID funds, federal funds. So this was an owner, Block Club broke this story. They've been following this very, very well for a few years now. In suburban Inverness, he pleaded guilty to a $14 million scheme where his company provided fake negative results when really they weren't actually even running those tests or the tests were inconclusive.
Oh my goodness.
Which is concerning on several levels, right? When we have all that money, this federal money that, you know, was just essentially thrown away. Mm-hmm. But also just like at the peak of the pandemic, if people were sort of continuing on with their lives thinking that they were negative and indeed they were positive.
Boarding planes, right?
Absolutely.
And sitting next to people.
Absolutely.
Could have been positive the entire time. My goodness.
And this was such new terrain for everyone. And it just seems like we keep hearing these stories. We've heard them about restaurants that misused these PPP loans and these funds. Like, it just, like, we're going to keep hearing these stories about the millions and millions
people
of
just
dollars.
Capitalizing off those early days of COVID.
And Black Club's great reporting about sad and great reporting about the doctors and leaders of Loretto Hospital and misusing the vaccine. So, yeah, he will be sentenced in February and he could face up to 20 years in federal prison.
All right, sports fans, this next one's for you. Nader, I want you to tell us about the debut of the Chicago Sports Network.
Yeah, so everyone's favorite NBC Sports Chicago is no longer. There's a new sports network in town to watch Bulls, Blackhawks, and White Sox games, although I'm not sure how many people are wanting to watch White Sox. Their season's over, but maybe next year. Maybe next year.
I want to watch Bulls games.
Yeah, Bulls games. And so there's this new sports channel. The problem is that they only have deals right now with DirecTV, and it's available over cable antennas. And so the biggest providers...
Not on Xfinity?
Right, not Xfinity yet. And it's a bit of a problem because the Blackhawks preseason is already underway.
Right.
I saw one of our colleagues, our Blackhawks reporter, Ben Pope, was writing about how a Blackhawks player, veteran, who didn't travel with the team for a preseason game, couldn't even watch the game on TV. He had to find ways to see what his own team was doing.
That's so not good.
It's a tough start for the channel, especially with the Blackhawks regular season opener coming on Tuesday and the Bulls preseason opener also coming on Tuesday. So they're going to have to figure that out fast if
the majority of sports
fans want to be able to watch.
It's a throwback because Wirtz never wanted Blackhawks games on TV back in the day. Remember?
He used to listen on the radio.
It would discourage people from actually attending was the argument.
All right. So new developments in sports broadcasting. Over now to new developments around the United Center. Owners say that we may see shovels in the ground as early as next summer. Here's how it's shaping up. So phase one of the development will include a 6,000-seat music hall, public plaza for events, and a boutique hotel. Owners Michael Reinsdorf and Danny Wirtz estimate phase one would create 4,000 construction jobs, 1,900 permanent jobs, and $275 million in annual economic impact. They also project a $796 million construction impact for phase one. Your thoughts, quick thoughts on all of the lots of numbers there, Carrie. But is this going to be a reality? Are we going to see construction around United Center next summer?
I mean, I guess that's the question for all these stadiums that are, and you know, Wrigley's a good example of, yes, you can develop these. Wrigleyville and around Wrigley is a completely different landscape than it used to be. Nader and I remember it looked nothing like that. Now there's a hotel. There are local restaurant chains.
It's a little bit of a Disney world.
It's a little Disney-fied. And, you know, the question will be for this 1901 project, which is a reference to the address of the Madhouse on Madison on the near west side, is that, you know, this is an area kind of on the cusp between West Loop and Garfield Park that, you know, development and gentrification keeps sort of pushing farther west. There are questions about how that displaces people. But also just like whenever a new new, there's a new game in town, a new venue, music venue or whatever, there become questions about, well, what about all the smaller venues and independent venues? Are they going to lose out? So yeah, it remains to be seen, I guess.
Interesting. Well, we're almost out of time, but I do want to stick with you here, Carrie, because Axios readers have crowned a winner in a contest that nobody wants to win. What? The most annoying intersection goes to? Drumroll.
So Elston, Ashland, Armitage, we all know it. There's a Mariano's, it's on your way to the Hideout. You know, there's a metro stop there. So there's always like people coming off the metro and they're trying to figure out where to cross.
Annoying.
It's very annoying. And we had several in there, and this is the one they crowned in the readers. And maybe this will get the city's attention to maybe,
perhaps.
You know, and there's always, you know, you're always kind of running the yellow light and you're stuck in the
number
intersection
one,
turning
annoying.
Left. Annoying. Yes.
They yes. got the crown. That's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Carrie Shepherd of Axios and Nader Issa of the Chicago Sun-Times. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You too.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Micah Yasin. Every Friday, Reset brings you the news that you need to know in under an hour. But if you want a few updates throughout the week, sign up for our newsletter. It comes out on Mondays and Fridays. And you can subscribe at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.